Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Welcome back to the Lanche and Rouge Cycling Podcast, presented by our show partner Zwift, the online cycling platform that makes training fun. This is the Giro second rest day, but the first real rest day. The first one was like a travel day when they needed to go from Hungary down to Sicily. This is after stage 9, where the first rest day normally is. We have 6 stages ahead, and today we're going to recap who won each stage, whether our opinions on GC have changed, preview stage 10 in depth with our picks, should Simon Yates continue, Wilco Kelderman blames his disc brakes for losing 10 minutes yesterday, and Alpecin confirm their World Tour application for next year. So a few topics to talk about, but to recap, the Giro started with that uphill sprint in Budapest, or just outside, Van der Poel won, then the TT. Simon Yates won, looking good. No big gaps. Cavendish won the first sprint. Went down to Sicily. Canner on Etna. No big GC gaps. Demar, back-to-back sprints. The resurgence. Maybe he had some macchiatos after last year. Everyone was on too much caffeine. Cohen Bowman with Dumoulin. Stage 7 break. Stage 8, Thomas de Gent break. And then Jai Hindley winning on Blockhouse in a group of 6 or so GC contenders yesterday, with Yates losing a lot of time. So the current standings after stage 9 is our leader, Juan Pedro Lopez, 12 seconds ahead of Almeida, Bardet 14 seconds back in third, Carapaz on 15, Hindley on 20, Martin 28, Landa 29, Pozzo 54, Buchmann 109, and Bilbao 122. What do you think about the first week, Benji? You feel we both picked Carapaz, I think.
No.
I still feel comfortable. You, for the listeners, Benji wanted to pick Carapaz, but I'm pretty sure.
That's not true.
But how are you feeling? I reckon.
How dare you put words in my mouth?
I feel more nervous about my Carapaz pick now, actually.
I feel less nervous about my Almeida pick now. Well, technically, I did pick him for every single jersey that's out there, and I'm pretty sure that's out of the window already. But when it comes to GC, I'm becoming rather bullish, and definitely after the words he had before the Blockhouse stage saying, I don't feel so good. I'm not feeling so well today. And then he ended up actually having a pretty good stage, not the best stage, not winning Blockhouse, but he's up there with the riders that finish in that first group. And yeah, I feel good about that. I'm hopeful for the final week. I said it, I think, yesterday on the podcast that I'm not sure whether that third week is going to be the same third week as he had in 2021, but I'm staying rather positive in that effect. I think that the climbs in the third week do somewhat fit him as well. So I look forward to seeing Joao win the third week. But when it comes to Carapaz, I don't know. I feel like I was bullish on Carapaz. I'm still bullish on Carapaz, but a slight bit less. Does that make sense?
It does, because that's how I feel as well. I'm feeling a little bit nervous, the fact they didn't try on stage 7 and they burnt port yesterday. That being said, 2 years in a row that the Giro has gone into the first rest day with very tight gaps. Bernal was 15 ahead of Evenepoel. How things changed after that in the Giro last year. Vlasov 21, Ciccone 36, Ciccone out of GC, Carthy out of GC, he was 44 back. So they've definitely designed backloaded parkour twice in a row. And even though Blockhouse was very hard, not monstrous gaps, Buchmann dropped, but still, I think he only lost like 16, 20 seconds, nothing major. And the week ahead is even softer. Nothing as dangerous as Blockhouse. We'll do stage 10 in detail, but tomorrow is like a rolly break day, maybe a sprint, 11 pure sprint. 12 has a 10K, 7% climb, like 21Ks from the finish, not a GC day. 13 sprint, 14 is up and down medium mountain. Maybe if any of us want to try something, they might. And then the mountain stage, the only proper one, is 12Ks, 7%, 13Ks, 7%, back-to-back. Sounds pretty hard, but then the finish is 22Ks, 4% with a very shallow finish. So nothing as hard as Blockhouse. So I don't expect big gaps this week, Benji. I think this is all going to be decided in week three.
I think so as well. The last week is that backloaded Grand Tour week that we were talking about. And I think that perhaps because of that, we will indeed see these gaps not necessarily expand too much. Perhaps one rider or two riders will have something happen to them in the coming week and therefore actually lose some time. But I'd like to just put some attention on like Romain Bardet. We don't speak about him too often this week, but I've got a feeling that he's probably running a lot better than a few people have expected. He was great at Tour of the Alps, so we saw him doing somewhat good here. But at the moment, he's one of the top three climbers in this race, arguably the second best, if not the best climber in this first 9 days. Would you rate it like that, or would you say that Carapaz Orlando were the better climbers these first 9 days?
It's hard to say. I definitely think his performance on Blockhouse is the best I've seen on a mountaintop finish from him in a long time. Really, really encouraging. And I thought he would get dropped, actually, on Blockhouse. And to be attacking, to be in that group, to be almost looking the strongest is crazy. And Arensman looked pretty good too, to be honest. He's on a minute 20, not out of the picture either, close enough that with the soft second week, other guys will have to respond to him. But before we get into maybe the losers of the first week, talk about our show partner, Zwift, the online cycling platform that me and Benji have been using to great effect. Zwift has real world and fantasy locations to ride in, hundreds of workouts on demand, training plans, a packed calendar of group rides and races, pace partners to drop in with, and ride at a set pace, and even the ability to create your own meetup. If you want to check out Zwift, if you haven't already, you can head to Zwift.com for a free 7-day trial. But speaking of people who will be disappointed in the Giro, I actually ran into Miguel Ángel López today, but Simon Yates will apparently, and this is according to Ciro Scognamiglio, I'm going to pronounce his name correctly this time, on Twitter, Yates will continue the Giro and go for stages. I think that's a bad idea, Benji.
Ooh, I think it depends. I think that Simon Yates in decent form can definitely win two mountain stages in this race, bringing up roughly 200 UCI points, I think, if he does that. But if that knee pain is indeed a big factor in why he lost time, he said it wasn't solely the knee pain, that the heat was also one of the reasons. If the knee pain is serious enough, then I wouldn't have him continue this race. But if it's not really the knee pain, if it's just the heat, and if he does have that climbing skill, he can take home two stages. And I think two stages is the same amount of points as getting 9 for 10th in GC. Do you think that the reason that you're saying it's a bad idea is because they need those UCI points from the tour?
It's twofold. Yes, it's mainly points related, but it's also if his knee is a real issue and it caused him to lose, what, like 11 minutes yesterday? The heat didn't make him lose 11 minutes.
Well, it did in Asturias as well, to be honest.
Well, fuck. Oh, yeah, good point. He's their golden ticket. Matthews, Yates, for their salvation. I mean, EF Hunting, Sam Bewley, friend of the podcast, yes, as well. Howson missed Hungary this GC this year, unfortunately. But yeah, Yates, you don't want to make that knee worse because Vuelta, he can top five, a lot of points, and probably get a stage at the same time. He took a stage at the Giro already. I don't know whether he wants to do Giro Tour combo, but the Vuelta, I think, really suits him. So I'm sure they know, but it's a risk keeping him in there, particularly when he has to, like, the stages that he can win, which of course he can from the break, but he's got to wait. I guess he got a week to recover because there's no mountain stages for ages. But yeah, I don't know. Their decision, but definitely a big blow for Bex maintaining World Tour status because we had the announcement today in the press conference. What an odd time to announce it. Not when MVDP won Flanders or before. Giro first rest day, Alpes and Phoenix have announced that they have applied for World Tour status next year. If you don't know, you probably do because you listen to the pod and I keep banging on about it. there's a set number of World Tour licenses, 18. There's currently 18 World Tour teams. Arkea, I think I understand, have applied. Now, Alpecin have definitely applied or said they have. That's 20 teams. Two teams will have to miss out, and Alpecin have the most points, so they will be going to World Tour as long as they have the financial requirements met, etc., which I assume they do. Why do you think they've applied, Benji? They've had the best position in cycling for ages, where they get auto invites. They don't have to go to races they don't want to, and they can just target big, high prestige events with MVDP.
Thing is, there's never the security that system will remain the same in pro team level, where the first two will get automatic invites for the rest of like eternity. There's gonna come a point when UCI might actually come in and say, okay, perhaps we are giving too many benefits to those top two pro teams, and therefore change the system. So I think the secure way is to actually be a World Tour team. But next to that, I think the status of being a World Tour team might help them improve it, sponsorship related stuff and so forth. Because if you go to a new company that is not 100% knowledge with how cycling works, and you say, oh, I've got a cycling team, we're doing well, but we're a second division team. It sounds a bit more lame than saying, oh, we're a World Tour team, top level, just like all those other big teams. We are like that. So I don't know. I think there's something in that status as well. But I do want to note that, why does Alpecin always like pretend like something's not happening for months? Everybody knows that they applied for a World Tour team for months already, and now they're announcing it like a few months later. And yeah, I think the hype for it is completely gone for me.
Well, yeah, they seem to be like, oh, is MVP doing this? Like, I don't know. They try to cloak things in mystery. It's like, just no one cares. Just say it. Apparently, they're also, PCS is also already calling them Alpecin de Koenig. So Phoenix are not remaining as the title sponsor. I don't know when that kicks in exactly. Might be midway through this year. But Phoenix, well, no, De Koenig were obviously the sponsor of De Koenig Quickstep. Now it's Quickstep Alpha Vinyl. And then in terms of sponsor, Carousel, Soudal are going from Lotto to Quickstep. And it's all going to be very, very confusing for the sports commentators. But yeah, before I talk about, I guess, the Alpecin team construction, what needs to change, if you want to catch up on the Giro d'Italia, GCN Plus is the best place to do so, who support the LRCP Giro coverage. You can catch up on every kilometer and then watch every kilometer live of the Giro ad-free on GCN Plus worldwide, excluding New Zealand. Catch up when it suits you on any screen, anytime, anywhere. Full stage replays as well as on-demand highlights. All LRCP listeners from the US, UK, Australia, Canada, and Germany can get 25% off an annual GCN Plus subscription by heading to gcn.eu/LRCP through the link in the description down below. Thanks to GCN Plus for supporting our Giro coverage. What needs to change about Alpecin though, Benji? I look at this team, apart from Jay Vine and Tobias Baier sometimes, they are very, very one-dimensional. This does not look like a proper World Tour team to me.
Yes, certainly, but there's other World Tour teams that also don't look like a proper World Tour team to me. But I got to be honest, this is a team that has a few stars, and about 60 to 70% of the team is not really the riders that you'd be expecting in a World Tour team, in my personal opinion. And I think that's going to improve over the years. I think you can't expect the team to change from pro team status to World Tour status and immediately have all the riders necessary for that level. I think they've also got the benefit of having their dev team that also grows proper talents from young and therefore can bring up talent that can fold into this World Tour team then eventually. But you're right, it's very one-dimensional. Climbers, there's very limited aspects to it there. You're right, Jay Vine, Tobias Baier, and you can also perhaps count the likes of a Murisa, who once got, I think, fourth on Planche de Belfi or something in the Tour as a climber these days in that team, because that's kind of it. Like, there's not too much more in there. So that's an area where they will have to improve if they want to compete in more races and if they want to actually go for GC in plenty of these World Tour races they will have to ride next year. And they're already writing tons of like World Tour races, but they're going to have to ride through the Romandy and so forth, stuff like that. I don't know. They need more climbers, and there's definitely riders on the market for that. But to be honest, it's such a limited transfer market this year when it comes to GC riders and mountain domestiques that I don't think it will be super easy to make that transition in 1 year only. So I expect that to take a while.
Yeah, and it makes sense that they've applied. As Benji said, the UCI could turn around one day and say, use it or lose it with the wild card. You know, the point of this system is to get yourself up to World Tour if you're good enough, not to just sit in that auto wildcard zone. And as Benji said, you cannot, if you're a pro team, you can't sign a three-year sponsorship deal and guarantee Tour de France participation. You can say, hey, we're really likely to, but you can't guarantee it. And so that makes a difference when you're a World Tour team. You can sign on the dotted line with your title sponsor and say, we will be from 23 to 25 at the Tour de France, at the Vuelta, at the Giro, at every monument, every year, even if Van der Poel gets injured, because that's the risk. MVP gets injured, Merlier leaves, Philipsen has a down year or leaves or gets injured, all of a sudden Total Energy come up, UnoX come up, and it's not looking like you get the auto wildcards for everything, or Lotto, or Israel. So it makes sense to go World Tour. But as I said, finds their best climber and GC prospect, but they'll need to fill that out a little bit more. Ben Tullett, they let go, and I don't know what they're doing with Philipsen. Merlier is rumored to leave. But yeah, interesting for Alpecin, moving on up. Arkea will be probably moving on up as well. Other news was coming out after recording yesterday. Kelderman apparently, who lost like 10 minutes yesterday, and he was looking in good shape at this Giro d'Italia. He came seventh in the TT, was very good on the first uphill finish like he was in the Tour last year where he came fifth. He lost on Blockhouse 11 minutes. He had multiple mechanicals, and he said that on the Lanciano descent, which was very fast, apparently, well, he thinks the heat from the disc brakes like warped his spokes and broke his wheel. So yeah, I mean, I don't know if that's true or not. It definitely could be. Well, no, like whether
I believe him, but it's
well, I also do, but he might have hit a bump or something and warped the spokes. But I think, oh, I'm trying to tiptoe around a disc brake, rim brake debate, Benji. But it's clear, Benji, not all the pros are happy with them. That is clear. What have you heard others complaining as well?
I think there's riders that definitely have a preference. I think that it's also depending on the parkour. We know that Pogacar, for example, always takes rim brakes on the climbs, but that's not necessarily because of the brakes on paper. At least that's what he says. It's because of the weight of those disc brakes, which is actually an effect of those disc brakes. So, you know, there's multiple aspects to it. Does it pay off and balance out the weight difference on certain bike manufacturers and so forth? I don't know, but hey, I've got rim brakes and I have never actually had disc brakes on my bike, so I can't tell you personally. But in all honesty, hey, it's possible what Kiwilko is saying, that that is the reason for it. I don't know.
I mean, Froome said something similar. I've managed to crash without a problem on both rim and disc brake bikes. So
that's you.
Yeah, they seem fine for me. Crash equally well on both of them. But it's funny, Froome obviously got the YouTube channel, signed Israel for a big contract, partially for exposure, and Factor are like rubbing their hands. They got Froome on board, and he spends half the time on the YouTube channel talking about how much he hates disc brakes and disc bikes, or disc brake bikes. But yeah, I think even looking at wheel changes, they're much slower. People just go for the full bike change straight away now. They don't even mess around, the big GC guys.
Were we not tiptoeing around the discussion of rim brakes versus disc brakes? Because I swear we just jumped into it.
I've added myself. I've added myself straight up. I think it's obscene. I think it is obscene and a disgrace that there are GC contenders doing mountaintop finishes with bikes heavier than the UCI weight limit. I think it just makes no sense to me. And obviously, you can do the maths and be like, well, the aero, you know, this bike's more aero, so if you know, you'll save what's going up to the mountaintop finish. But Blockhouse, man, come on, like, or climbs like that. It really does matter. But that's the thing. People don't realize, Benji, these guys are not riding 6.8 kilo bikes around. Like, a lot of them are riding heavier bikes than that. And these guys are like 58, 60 kilos. An extra 400 grams, 500 grams, it matters. I'm cutting myself off. We're getting derailed. The comments are going to be too much. Otherwise, stage 10 tomorrow. I don't know what this is, Benji. It's 195Ks, pancake flat for the first 100, and then rolling terrain for the last 95. This looks like MVDP, Binium. Is it too hard for DeMar? I think it is. 1,700 meters, 6%, 10Ks from the finish with hills preceding that. Surely Intermarché and Alpecin can drop DeMar and co.
Well, I hope they are in the breakaway, because they're going to have to, according to my predictions of months ago. Kolvi was going to win the stage from the breakaway. I'm actually not that bullish on Kolvi based on his form I've seen so far in this race, but I might switch that to Mauro Schmidt as a rider that's shown to be very good on stage. Was it 8? Yes,
Napoli,
8.
Yeah. Basic so math.
He was very good there. He was arguably equal to Van der Poel in some shape or form and Girmay, roughly. And I'd argue that he can be the factor to win the stage. And he won that Montalcino stage, and he's going to try and copy-paste that the year after. And was it also on stage 10? It was not. Okay, that's a bummer. It would have been funny if he won stage 10 every single year. But that's not the case here. It's going to be a stage 10 this year, stage 11 last year. But that's my pick for that. I think this might just be one of those stages like the Bettiol stage last year, where the break goes away.
Yeah,
Peloton says, so. Oh, let's give them 14 minutes.
Resubmit.
And then, oh, God, no.
Don't you think it's like that stage as well? The Campanaz Rysavik one?
That was a boring stage.
Well, I mean, I got some bad news for you, Benji. I don't think this is... I mean, hopefully the Napoli one was all right, but... Yeah, unless the only thing that might spice this up is if Israel are like Nizzolo's climbing really well, Gaviria's climbing really well, but I think it's just too hilly. It's way too hilly.
Yep.
So, nah. It should be a break. Here's the thing though. Napoli stage, if you're MVDP and Binnie and Benji, what learnings do you apply to this stage from, I guess, the errors of that one?
Well, I think before that stage started, we said perhaps the best option is to control it from the peloton, because you can't control a large breakaway with solely Van der Poel and Binyam in the breakaway, or they find a way to get multiple riders in the breakaway, which probably would be the most effective way to set this up. But it's harder to get that going on a flat start to a stage. I think it's easier to get a large breakaway with multiple riders of your team going on a stage that has hills at the start, which with this one doesn't.
I know, that's the problem, because Van der Poel, if he can bring Rysavik with him, would be really, really good. For Binium, I don't know where Lorenzo Rota has been this Giro, but, you know, if Binium can bring a friend, that then lets them take...
Tetsvatsion.
Yeah, well, is Tetsvatsion. Can he win this? Can he win this stage? He was looking incredible on Blockhouse. Yeah. He's kind of fast.
Perhaps.
Yeah. I don't mind Tetsvatsion for this. He's fourth at GP Industria, which is a hilly circuit stage, behind Ulisi. I think Ulisi should try and get in the break as well. Maybe Formolo, see the UAE guys once again.
I think Tetsvatsion loses it, because he's probably going to do the same thing that he did the last two times that I saw him in the breakaway, which was play it smart, try and sit at the back of the group, and eventually miss the split that actually goes for the victory.
Possible. But I think MVDP will be the favorite. Binium second favorite. Let's see if they can get it right after stage 8. I'm not sure whether it be break or peloton. Probably MVDP from the break is my guess. He doesn't usually miss out when given two opportunities. But that was our Giro rest day recap. We got tight GC gaps in the first week. I don't expect huge action in the second week. Perhaps if Ineos or someone, one of these teams with two GC guys, DSM, Bora, and Bahrain, within 1 minute, they might try and play a guy up the road on Konya, like Courmayeur stage with Carapaz and Landa. We can only live in hope. We'll assess that before that stage kicks off. But that's all from us. I'm going to go get some sun and have a rest myself. And we'll see you tomorrow with Stage 10 Recap. Ciao.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.